Exposure, just gonna, we're gonna start up. Thanks everyone for coming out to this lecture and Halifax Hope Lodge for leading Afghanistan, Washington warlords and the propaganda of silence. My name is Stuart Napi. I'm a member of the Halifax Peace Coalition. We're very pleased to have Sonali and Jim here. Their work on Afghanistan has been kind of continuous over the last 6 years, and they've really provided critical support for women's movements operating in Afghanistan, working in the especially difficult political terrain between really resisting the injustices of both empire and fundamentalism. So we're really quite fortunate to have them down here. I've been asked to just say a few words about the Canadian context of foreign policy to sort of situate what you will hear from Sonali and Jim. I guess just broadly, the main thing that probably most people are quite aware of here is that we are in a context in which Canadian foreign policy and Canadian domestic policy is rapidly moving in line with that of the United States. In terms of this summer, we saw an unprecedented move in that direction under the Harper government. All of you are probably quite well aware of the Canadian government's stance on the during the invasion of Lebanon by the Israeli government. During the bombardment, which killed an estimated 1,200 individuals, mostly civilian in Lebanon, and continues to go on in the Gaza Strip, the Canadian response was very much one of alignment with Israel. Stephen Harper was quoted as calling this bombardment a, quote, measured response, and referred to it as self-defense, despite the high civilian death toll. This kind of flies in the face of Canadian foreign policy in under previous administrations of the Canadian government, both liberal or conservative. Back in the Trudeau years, the Canadian government chastised the Israeli government for the last invasion of Lebanon in 1982 quite vocally. Even in the 1980s, during the First Intifada, Joe Clark, former Canadian Prime Minister, in a room full of Israeli lobbyists, at one point basically chastised the Israeli government for its policy of attacking unarmed Palestinian demonstrators, and specifically cited the example of Yitzhak Rabin's call for the breaking of bones of demonstrators. So this is a context that's really quite different from what we've seen under different liberal and conservative governments in the past over the past few decades. There are other examples, of course. The example of Haiti, I have quite a bit of experience with. In February of 2004, after the inauguration of Paul Martin, the last Liberal Prime Minister, Canada essentially supported a military coup of the elected leader of Haiti, Jean-Bertrand Aristide. Now, Aristide was removed from his home on February 28th of 2004 by U.S. Marines and was driven to the airport in Port-au-Prince, the capital of this country, which was secured by Canadian troops. From there, he was basically flown to the Central African Republic, a country in which he knew no one. Ever since that time, Canadian foreign policy has essentially, in Haiti, supported an unelected dictatorial regime that has, in many ways, gone on a rampage of human rights abuses. This, again, it's really, in this case, was about a sort of penance, in many cases, for Canada not taking part in the Iraq conflict. And the result is very clear today. A recent study from the Lancet, the British Medical Journal, found that within the two-year period, 2004 to 2006, there were an estimated 8,000 murders that took place in Haiti's capital alone, one every 12 minutes, 4,000 of which were politically motivated, were committed by political actors, the majority of which were aligned with the interim Canadian supported government, whether it be the Haitian National Police, members of the former military, and so forth. And then of course, we come to the case of Afghanistan. 90% of Canadian forces in the country at this point are basically supporting military operations taking place in Kandahar province in the south of the country. This is a very aggressive military campaign. The rate of bombings is in fact comparable, and in fact greater, than what you'd find in most regions of Iraq and the U.S. occupation. Canadian generals have consistently bragged about their role as fighting forces. General Hillier, about a year ago this summer, bragged on Canadian television about Canada's role as one of killing detestable murderers and scumbags, and was quoted as saying that we are not the civil service, our job, we are the Canadian forces, our job is to kill people. So the stance, even the public relations of Canada's military has really taken a turn towards the more extreme over the last couple of years. And within Afghanistan, what we've seen over the last number of days, it's very clear that things aren't really getting better. The latest incursions, Operation Medusa, a very aggressive military operation that took place within the south of the country, was led by Canadian forces. So without really going on too long, the only other thing I'd mention about the Canadian role in all of this is that often this very aggressive military campaign is cloaked in the language of humanitarianism, of protecting so-called failed states, of using the responsibility to protect these so-called failed states. There's much talk within Canadian academic and military circles of a 3D approach, a three-block warfare, in which supposedly Canadian military forces can be fighting an aggressive military campaign in one city block, pursuing stabilization operations in another city block, and pursuing humanitarian operations within the third city block. The emphasis is of course, on basically integrating humanitarian operations and aid operations into a wider counterinsurgency military campaign. Okay. So this is all of this language is quite dense, quite complicated, and I believe that both Sonali and Jim will do a pretty good job in unpacking it. I guess regardless, I'd like to thank everyone for coming out. Just as a bit of a note, we will be, towards the end of the lecture, there'll be about 20 minutes each for both Sonali and Jim to speak, followed by just a period of question and answer, which I will be moderating. We'll ask by that point that people keep their questions relatively short, particularly focused upon questions, if at all possible. And we will, towards the end of the lecture, be passing the hat in order to basically recoup costs for the Halifax Peace Coalition. We're a voluntary-based organization, so anything you can do to help would be much appreciated. So, Sonali Kolhatkar and James Ingalls are the two co-directors of the Afghan Women's Mission, which is a U.S.-based fundraising organization which raises funds for women's projects in Afghanistan, most notably the Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan, one of the longest-running women's organizations in the country. Their writings have appeared in Zed Magazine, Foreign Policy in Focus, On Alternate, Common Dreams, and in Counterpunch. And in February of 2005, both traveled to the region in order to witness firsthand the results of U.S. and international foreign policy within the country, and to get an idea of what Afghans are really saying about the current war taking place. Sonali is also the host of a popular program called Uprising on KPFK Radio in Los Angeles. And James is a staff scientist at the Spitzer Science Center at the California Institute for Technology. So I guess just please give the first speakers a warm welcome.